Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit betterhelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Life is full of what-ifs, some awesome, like what if AI could fold your laundry? And some, well, less awesome, like what if you have unexpected medical costs? UnitedHealthcare can help get you covered with Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans. They supplement your primary plan to help you manage out-of-pocket costs. No deductibles, no enrollment periods, and especially no more what-ifs. Visit uh1.com to find the Health Protector Guard plan for you.
Quality sleep is essential. That's why the Sleep Number Smart Bed is designed for your ever-evolving sleep needs. Need a bed that's firmer or softer on either side? Helps you sleep at a comfortable temperature? Sleep Number Smart Beds let you individualize your comfort, so you sleep better together. J.D. Power ranks Sleep Number number one in customer satisfaction with mattresses purchased in-store. And now, save 50% on the Sleep Number Limited Edition smart bed for a limited time. For J.D. Power 2023 award information, visit jdpower.com/awards. Only at a Sleep Number store or sleepnumber.com.
I'm Sandra, and I'm just the professional your small business was looking for. But you didn't hire me, because you didn't use LinkedIn Jobs. LinkedIn has professionals you can't find anywhere else, including those who aren't actively looking for a new job, but might be open to the perfect role, like me.
In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't visit other leading job sites. So if you're not looking on LinkedIn, you'll miss out on great candidates, like Sandra. Start hiring professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Wow.
Nice.
Yeah.
What you're hearing are the sounds of people everywhere putting on Bombas socks, underwear, and T-shirts made from absurdly soft materials that feel like plush clouds. Yeah, that plush. And the best part? For every item you purchase, Bombas donates another to someone facing homelessness.
Bombas, big comfort for everyone. Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
This is Paige, the co-host of Giggly Squad, and I want to tell you about a company that I've been loving, Olive & June. Olive & June gives you everything that you need for a salon-quality manicure in one box. And if you break it down, it really comes out to $2 a manicure, which is absolutely insane. It's also so easy to get salon-worthy nails at home with Olive & June. The difference between how your nails used to look when you did them yourself and now with the Manny system is a complete game changer. The best thing about Olive & June, too, is it's a quick dry. It dries in about 1 minute, lasts for 5 days, and full coverage in up to 1 to 2 coats. Visit oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system. That's oliveandjune.com/perfectmanny20 for 20% off your first system.
The following is a presentation of the Four Center podcast feed.
From the center of the galaxy, this is the Four Center podcast feed, and this particular episode is the Clone Wars Report.
He sees a god.
I was hoping for a Jar Jar noise, and I was curious which one it would be. If it would be the one he does a couple of times. I think the hee-haw, hee-wah. Yeah. I wrote it down. Hee-wah, hee-wah, yeah.
I realize I don't speak Gungan too well other than Mises and Weeses, so I have to learn some Gungan.
Yes, I want to believe that the call hee-wah is the way that they say He-Man. He-Man in the Masters of the Universe. Now I want to know how you say Skeletor in Gungan. Anyway, we are very excited to be here for this particular episode of the Clone Wars Report. I've been waiting to get to this one for a long time. I'm Joseph Scrimshaw. The person speaking to some good Gungan is Ken Knapsack, and we are here to discuss Windu and Binks' buddy comedy action movie. It is, I love it so much. It's so weird. And I think also perhaps a little under-discussed from the amount that's going on in it. Mm-hmm. The episodes in this arc, season 6, episode 6, The Disappeared, part 1, written by Jonathan Rinsler and directed by Stuart Lee. Season 6, episode 7, The Disappeared, part 2, written by Jonathan Rinsler and directed by Bosco Eng. We were talking as we were getting going. It's great to see this writer who is associated with so many great behind the scenes making of storytelling of Star Wars to have a credited actual narrative bit of Star Wars here. I was reading on Wikipedia that Mr. Rinsler himself communicated on his Star Wars YouTube channel that he went through one of those processes that happen in Hollywood where he named some of these characters and there's some lines, but there were a lot of changes from his initial script, which is something that does happen a lot. Yeah. Do you have any thoughts on that, Ken?
It is great to see J.W. Rinsler's name, and you kind of forget that he had something to do with this. That is both normal and heartbreaking news to hear. I get it. But look, the end result is great, and that's how it works, and you get credited, you know, for whatever you contributed to the story and all that good arbitration stuff and all the business side of it. But it's just good to have his name here, especially after he passed away last year. It's a heartwarming thing to see that he has such a legacy in Star Wars.
Absolutely. And even if a lot of the details or structure or individual lines were changed, it's still clearly the heart of this is clearly his soul is speaking through Queen Julia. And a lot of the names are his and in the general mood and feeling. Other big picture thing I wanted to ask you about. I keep saying I feel like episodes in season 6 are under discussed. I don't know if that's just, me being bad at taking the temperature of social media discussion. I wonder if it's an effect of these all just premiered on Netflix right at the end of the run of Clone Wars while everything else was Rebels was, going to be starting real soon and all that. Mm-hmm. What do you think about that? Do you think this whole season is under discussed or am I full of it?
No, I think you're half full of it. No. Well, the only reason I would think that is the five stuff gets discussed in some way. But here's the thing. I don't even know if you don't hear season 6. In fact, I think until the Clone Wars report, I think I might have answered a trivia question saying that was in season 5, probably because the name 5 is said. So I think you're right. And the Yoda stuff gets mentioned, but I don't think it gets discussed. I think it is overlooked. It is post-sale. And there's something, you and I talk music a lot here on this channel. You know, when a band releases the B-sides and rarities album and you just kind of go, I'll get to that. There's probably a deep cut I'll like. I think when you hear, oh, it's the Lost Sessions, it's episodes they didn't really finish or we didn't get to tell the story because we got canceled. You might just overlook it a little bit. That's a general statement. But I think I even find myself doing that you get to end of season 5 and you're like, oh, that's where it ended. Oh, that's right. They got to release some B-sides. And these are A-sides. All right. This is Strawberry Fields and Penny Lanes. Then these particularly these two episodes, talk about overlooked. I mean, you got some big stuff going on with Yoda at the end. You got the big stuff with Fives and the chips and everything, and the inhibitors at the beginning. In the middle is this buddy cop comedy that's pretty spiritual, pretty interesting its statement on the big picture. So happy to discuss it today.
Yeah. Okay. Well, I'm glad you're right. That people do discuss the Fives, and maybe that's it. Maybe just a lot of what I see is the discussion about character arcs. People love talking about Kenobi and Anakin and Ahsoka and the clones' journey and some of these episodes that are really important and unique and weird. Maybe they don't get featured as much, but we're happy to discuss them here. We're going to start with our summary. Are you ready, Ken?
Oh yeah.
Disorder. As the Clone Wars rage on, more and more neutral planets feel the spread of the dark side. On the planet Bardotta, members of the ancient Force-sensitive council known as the Dagoian Masters are disappearing one by one. Seeking help, Bardotta's leader, Queen Julia, contacts the Republic saying she will only speak to one being, Representative Jar Jar Binks. The Dagoian Masters, who interact with the Force passively, allowing their minds to float within the living Force, have banned the Jedi from their planet, believing the Order's practice of bringing Force-sensitive younglings to the temple is a form of kidnapping. But the Jedi are hesitant to send Jar Jar alone, so Jedi Master Mace Windu accompanies the chaotic Gungan. Passing Mace off as his servant, Jar Jar meets with the council and Queen Julia, promising aid. It quickly becomes clear that the bond between Jar Jar and Queen Julia is a romantic one. They spend a night together and the next day perform a meditative dance ritual. Queen Julia reveals her journeys in the Force have revealed a deadly plot. But before she can share the details, an impatient Mace Windu barges in. Jar Jar and Mace have words, and in the meantime, Queen Julia disappears. The council informs Jar Jar that an ancient prophecy says if the queen is not returned in 3 rotations, a terrible evil will engulf the galaxy. Mace asks where the prophecy comes from, and the council reveals their sacred temple is built on a dark temple, created by the Frengal cult worshippers of the war demon Malmoral. Mace and Jar Jar journey down into the depths and quickly discover a ritualistic stone temple surrounded by seething lava. The Frengal cult is stealing the life essence, the literal living force, out of the bodies of the Dagoyan masters and containing it within a glowing green orb. Mace fights valiantly and Jar Jar fights clumsily, but they are unable to stop the cultists from escaping off-planet with Queen Julia. Jar Jar gives a rousing speech to the council, assuring them that he will rescue his beloved Queen Julia. Seeing Jar Jar's bravery, tenacity, and connection with the Bardotan people, Mace warms to the childlike Gungan. They track the cultists to the nearby moon, Zardasa Styx. Mace uses the Force to sense the presence of the stolen essence, and the unlikely duo chase after the cult. The cultists assure one another they will succeed and fully restore the power of the mysterious figure known as the Great Mother. Mace and Jar Jar work together, fighting off cultists and Gundarks, but the cultists escape into the desert. Mace procures an Eopi and a Dalgo, 2 powerful beasts of burden, and he and Jar Jar race to the rescue. Mace counsels Jar Jar to stop focusing on his anxiety and instead center himself on the task at hand. How can he best help Queen Julia? Meanwhile, the cultists reach an open-air temple in the desert and strap Queen Julia to an altar. When the stars align and the focusing lenses lock into place, her essence will be taken and given to the Great Mother, who is revealed to be Mother Talzin. Talzin herself is not a natural Force user, but rather manipulates dark magic to achieve power. But if she absorbs Julia's natural connection to the Force, she will become more powerful than any Jedi or Sith. Jar Jar and Mace arrive, but Jar Jar accidentally activates the Stone Guardians, huge techno-organic rock robots. But Mace and Jar Jar work together to defeat them. They plunge the temple with clear goals. Mace will face Talzin, while Jar Jar will keep his focus on rescuing Julia. Summoning a blade of flaming green magic, Talzin duels Mace. Jar Jar successfully frees Julia, and together they push the Frengal cult leader into the focusing beam. His essence is stolen, but the orb falls and shatters. The energy is released, creating a massive wave of explosive energy. Defeated for now, Talzin dissipates into a green mist. Queen Julia thanks Jar Jar, who encourages her to thank Mace Windu as well. Julia declares perhaps this will be a new beginning for the Bardotans and the Jedi. Jar Jar calls for the steeds with a cry of "Hee-wa!" And the victorious heroes ride off. The end. Such a happy adventure of darkness, right?
Yeah, absolutely is. Absolutely. Oh,
I learned a lot of things by writing this, including remembering to say war demons' names aloud to myself first. Malmoral. There we go.
Malmoral. There you go.
Yeah, you got to be, when you're calling out a demon's name, you got to be really careful about pronouncing it correctly.
Yeah.
You're going to maybe raise the wrong demon, right?
According to the ghost hunting shows I watch on Discovery late at night. Yeah, absolutely. Got to be careful.
Enunciate in your dark rituals, everyone. So, Ken, what was your overall reaction to this odd two-parter? Did you love it? Did you like it? Yeah. Did you struggle with it? What was your initial reaction? All that great stuff.
No, I got to tell you, I really do love it, and I love it now. Just been the continuous joyful journey of the Clone Wars support of going back and looking at things. I don't think I ever would have thought of revisiting these episodes. They are odd. They are weird. The way they use Jar Jar in Clone Wars is I love it. And the power of his comedy, and you got Ahmed Best here voicing Jar Jar. And it's wonderful, but I wouldn't seek it out. And in fact, I saw this arc being made fun of just like a couple days ago on Twitter. When that story broke of Hayden Christensen, like, yeah, I watched all of Clone Wars and Rebels to get ready for returning to my role, Darth Vader. And someone, it was a funny joke of like, imagine Hayden sitting through this arc and it's Julia and Jar Jar doing that kiss mind meld thing. I get it. That it is a funny joke because it is weird. But there's, and it's fitting that Rensselaer has something to do with this. He's so studied on not just Star Wars but Indiana Jones. This is Temple of Doom. This is Last Crusade, all the way through it in a lot of ways. And as a fan of that franchise and that character, Indiana Jones, I just kind of love that being so prevalent here in Star Wars. It's shown up from time to time, time to time again in Clone Wars, I should say. But I just really got caught up in that vibe. Plus the buddy cop side is kind of funny too. And a little bit more justice for Jar Jar. All that to say, it all leads to some big things. There's some spiritual discussions and crisis of faith and the way faith is used and abused by others. There's a lot of big statements here in these two episodes.
Yeah, I really enjoyed it the first time. I agree with a lot of your analysis. I was so in love with the Clone Wars, so blown away by season 5 and season 6. I was, I think I probably watched season 6 in 2 or 3 sittings.
Yeah,
because I just so wanted to know how it ended for now, and was just wanting to kind of gobble it all up. And I felt this. This sadness and this understandable sort of tragedy of all of these episodes, all of these arcs towards the end are about the darkness closing in. And I feel like this arc is as well. It starts with yet another neutral planet is falling to darkness is literally, what is being not word for word, but what is being said from the narrator right at the beginning. So this was kind of this fun break where it is still about the darkness creeping in, but it's also this just great buddy comedy that is really like, hey, look, we've given some justice to Jar Jar in early Clone Wars episodes, right? We've paired him up with Padme and with the Bail. But who is the funniest character to pair Jar Jar up with? And just the fun of like Mace Windu's character has developed that he is just a grumpy Jedi. Anything is possible through the Force except for smiling, according to Mace Windu, and just like the perfect buddy comedy setup. So the fact that it is this kind of fun, wild lark of an episode that also is built on all of this Force philosophy, and I think it is very pulpy, which makes sense because of all that Indiana Jones connection, right? The literal sort of a literal Temple of Doom, kind of one for one going down into the lava temple under the, traditional place. And then the end with the Last Crusade kind of write off. And I've even seen Wikipedia discussing fighting over if there's an accurate source for it, but the observation that the Dagoian Master's council chamber looks a lot like the chamber of the interdimensional beings in Crystal Skull. So it is, it's just kind of everywhere. But the I talk about liking the pulpy vibe a lot, and these two episodes are a lot of times what I'm talking about. If it's just the aesthetic of that sort of wild imagination, that why not just energy of throw everything into the stew, hidden lava temples, essence orbs, magic, invisibility dust. And now we're getting into like cosmic horror, the stars align and the time is right and Cthulhu will rise and you can suck people's energy out on a weird moon and stone guardians and flaming green swords. It's just kind of endless. Let's pull from everywhere and make it really pulpy. And then kind of along with that, there's that kind of pulpy energy that sometimes comes with the why not of, if I had a critique of this episode, is like, there's definitely some things that I'd want a little bit more information on. And there's some things that are just like, just get thrown at you. And they're like, just deal with it. Don't question it. Go with it. We got our foot on the gas and we're having fun. Like along with the big ideas. And that makes it feel pulpy too, of that. Like, this has not been overworked in terms of explaining every little thing,
Oh yeah, no. I have some Mother Talzin questions. Like, what would she put out an ad on LinkedIn or something to hook up with different organizations? I love what you're saying too, of just what it pulls from, what it draws from, and in the way we kind of approach these episodes, where we are digging deep, we're having so much fun. We get our little theme shovels and we dig deep into all these episodes. It doesn't mean you have to watch them all like that. And even if upon learning some of the deeper themes, you might not revisit some of these episodes. And I don't know, I think I actually will revisit these more than I would have 5-6 years ago when these dropped, because it definitely was, it was a weird, like, pump the brakes in the middle of a great season for me. I really love the last season, the last sessions or missions, whatever they are. when it was dropped, and you get to these episodes and you're just so trained to be like, oh, it's a weird Jar Jar arc. I don't know. You just ingrained because of the pop culture discussion around Jar Jar. But I love digging deep and love finding the stuff there. And then also just enjoying what you're talking about, the whiz bang pop culture, pulpy vibes that are all the way through this. A lot of fun.
Yeah, yeah, absolutely. And I get if some people would be like, oh, yeah, no, this one is not my favorite. But for me, I love engaging with the deeper ideas, which we're going to talk about. But I also can kind of see myself as like, if I just want to watch a short bit of Clone Wars, this is a fun romp and it's funny. And, you know, it takes a while for some of the action to kick in. But when it does, there's some great action, you know, just really fun moments and all that. The one thing that I do want to talk about right at the beginning, Ken, is I do wonder about, you know, throughout the Clone Wars, there's a lot we've talked about. There's a lot of times where, you know, aliens just speak in voice styles or patterns or accents of real people, everything from Scottish to, Indian, right? In this arc. And I also really love the Temple of Doom stuff. We're going to probably geek out about some of that, about the pulpy stuff. But also, I do want to acknowledge that Temple of Doom comes under discussion, as it should, for is as well as the whole Indiana Jones milieu of that. Is this an example of, you know, creators loved these early 20th century pulps that have some, you know, cultural stereotypes in them?
Right.
In the thrill of updating something you loved as a child, you accidentally take that baggage with you. And I don't feel like I'm an expert to speak on it, but I want to acknowledge that I think there is that in this arc, that you've got the Temple of Doom and Indiana Jones pulling from very early 20th century stuff that definitely has some baggage, and that gets updated. And then you pull from people are young and love Indiana Jones, and then you update it again and are accidentally maybe taking some baggage with you. I want to acknowledge that that is there, because I think for some people it might be a barrier to enjoying these episodes.
No, I think it's absolutely important to mention it. Temple of Doom, more than anything. Yeah, you're right. I rewatched it recently, and you just see it, and you're aware of it, and you should be. And it's part of moving storytelling forward. And these episodes, you know, written and conceived over 10 years ago themselves now, right? Probably when they put together. So yeah, that's the power of adapting and changing and other perspectives. It's hard not to ignore. There's a couple beats in here where I'm like, well, that's James Earl Taylor. I don't know if he should be doing that voice, but that's just a lot of those things that pop up. But we're here to dig into the core of the story without a doubt. But I think you're right there.
Yeah, just wanted to acknowledge if people feel like, hey, there should be a conversation about it. Absolutely agreed. I don't know that I have the expertise, but I acknowledge that there should be a conversation about some of those kind of moments in these kind of episodes. So acknowledged. And from there, we shall move on to the morals of the episodes. Two episodes, two morals. The first is, without darkness, there cannot be light. And the second is, wisdom is born in fools as well as wise men. What did you think of those morals?
I love Without Darkness, There Can Be No Light. I think that appears in every third U2 song. And as a U2 fan, that idea, you know, I love it. But I got to say, wisdom is born in fools as well as wise men I don't know, man. That's a deep thinker. And I loved it. I love the idea about it. I love we love wisdom in Star Wars versus knowledge. Dex is nodding at us here with Jar Jar and what he's often treated as and what he often is at times. You know, stumbles and bumbles. I stumble and bumble. So therefore, I like to think wisdom can be found in even me and Jar Jar.
Yes. Yeah. I love Without Darkness, there cannot be light. I always get a little nervous about that truth. It's a great truth to focus on. And I think a lot of Star Wars storytelling does a great job of depicting that, hey, pain, sadness, death, the cycle of life, you have to have goodbyes to have hellos, like can be told really well. I do get concerned sometimes when people see Without Darkness, There Cannot Be Light. It's sort of like, yeah, so 2 days a week, I'm a good person. 3 days a week, I let myself be an asshole. Balance, you know, I do get worried about it being interpreted that way of like, you know what? Suffering happens, so I shouldn't do anything about it. You know, I don't think this moral intends it that way in any way, shape, or form. That is not, to me, the moral of Star Wars or the moral of these episodes.
No.
But I sometimes kind of
flinch at that simple of a statement of it.
Interpretations of morals and meanings. Yeah, we've learned a lot, particularly in the last 5 years, of what that can mean. But I agree with you on that, without a doubt. But yeah, it definitely, like I said, it definitely has that vibe of you stubbed your toe and you learn from that pain, and you grow. And you wear a new sneaker. I don't know. That makes no sense. That's a bumper sticker.
Wear a new sneaker. The new Forest Center T-shirt. Yeah, and I agree with you. The other one is great. It is so just directly a conversation about Mace and Jar Jar, mm-hmm. and this ongoing story that Jar Jar maybe has perspective and value that people don't see in him, except for Mace does in this arc.
Yeah, comes to it. Yeah.
Yeah, eventually. So let's talk about those big ideas, the big themes. What was at stake in this episode? Where did you go when you were breaking down what the big ideas of this arc is?
I mean, there's some big ideas. Let's just start there. Big ideas. I put up top what I called faith and the crisis of faith, which is not unlike some of the big themes in Indiana Jones. We mentioned a lot of Temple of Doom and there's Last Crusade, like, you know, shot at the end, but the second episode has a lot of that kind of vibe from Last Crusade with the Holy Grail, eternal life, which is a power grab. And so there's a lot of what I looked at old beliefs and traditions being tested, but then also being abused by people for means of getting more power. Mother Talzin's just simply using this and abusing a lot of a lot of these beliefs and traditions and things just for her own power. And then it leads into a conversation of, you know, living force, cosmic force, what you might understand, bigger stuff coming with Yoda and his journey here in a bit. So I started there with that, and that kind of really was the big connection for Indiana Jones stuff there. Then there's some other things that that go down there, but your thoughts on Mother Talzin, Joseph?
Yeah, I kind of separated the arc into a little bit of Mace's journey and then a little bit of the kind of larger journey about the Force and exactly what you're talking about, the different ways that people connect with the Force and what does that tell us about what we pursue, you know, what are we really after? I love in The Last Crusade that is in such a... it's such a big part of what the story is and what the moral is of, like, the great quest for Indiana Jones in the third one is, I just want to know my dad.
Yeah.
You know, and it goes to looking for connection rather than possession. So I thought that there was a lot about connection versus possession, and in particular, sort of the passive versus the aggressive, right? There's, this is leading me to answering your Mother Talzin question. But we start with just kind of really getting a lot about the Dagoian masters of philosophy and perspective and the idea that they connect with the Force passively, that they're not really trying to have an impact on it. And, you know, I wrote down this whole Yoda quote. It's so great. A strong connection to the Force the Dagoian masters have, yet unlike the Jedi or Sith, they are warriors. They are not. Intuition, knowledge, the harmony of the universe is what they sense passively. They connect with the Force. So it's just this idea of what do you want out of this huge cosmic reality that connects us all? Like, we just want to sort of be one with it and meditate with it and maybe use it to power intuition and knowledge, which suggests that at some point, you know, they take some kind of action, but they're not like the Jedi. Like, we're going to meditate to the Force and realize there's a problem here and we're going to go run and do something about it.
Yeah.
In contrast to that passivity, the cultists in Mother Talzin are so aggressively taking people's energy, right? They're not just kind of floating around in it and learning. They're going, that should be mine. And we learn that Talzin is wanting to empower herself unnaturally, right? Taking like a shortcut to power, which is what you were saying, you know? And I thought it was great that she just literally says, I am not a natural force wielder like the Jedi or Sith. I use dark magic to achieve power. But as a Pardotan, you possess a strong connection to the living force. So it's this idea of great power exists, and it exists through all of us existing in our connection to one another, and let's all enjoy it, versus the cultism of the Talzin going, that's great. That should be mine. And even it's one of the things that I think the episodes are not concerned about being super clear on. The cultists have the goal of giving power to Mother Talzin, because yeah, she put out a a request on the dark web for you know, magic dark cultists, and yeah, got a ping from these people from the Frengal cult. Yeah. But then in that first episode, the cultists are specifically trying to feed a demon of war, a Malmoral. You know, and that is really, I think, connecting to this larger picture of passive versus aggressive, that they literally want this demon of war to be sated, right? They want, they're trying to agitate this demon into more action, which really connects to me with where this is in the Clone Wars, right? That Sidious successfully starting the war is agitating everything and causing aggression everywhere. And they're like, this is great. We got a demon who can help with this more.
No, go ahead. Sorry.
No, you please.
It's fascinating. This big picture stuff at play here. And we'll talk about that in a bit at what it connects to the larger story, but the shadow closing in on all corners of the galaxy, and how people use that, and how people use that to rise. Absolutely love that. And I love that. I mean, not to take, you know, not to make any insults against fans of magic or people go to the Magic Castle here in LA. But I love the line of just magic being viewed as an illusion. It is not a true power, which is why she needs to abuse everything else around her and take this aggressive action, like you said, to build her power. Big picture stuff indeed.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it ties into big Star Wars themes about connection and working together as a larger group, and that kind of what is good for one of us will often benefit the whole group, versus everybody's out for themselves, aggression, take.
Yeah.
And I thought it was really interesting. Well, we can certainly talk more about Mace and Jar Jar, but I think in terms of this passive versus aggressive, I think that's this delicate line that the Jedi always walk, right? Mm-hmm. That they have, on one hand, they feel like we want to be passive. Ideally, we're passive. We're just listening to the Force, and we want to just be sitting in a field, and if something bad is going to happen, we'll stop it. Or if somebody comes to us and goes, hey, could you stop this? I'm asking you. Like, okay, well, then I will intervene. You know, they want to be passive, but they also feel this responsibility of, well, we have power. We have connection to the Force. It is, you know, with great power comes great responsibility. There's Spider-Man about it, right?
Yeah.
And Mace is one of these characters who is, he meditates like Yoda, but Mace makes decisions quickly. And once he makes his decision, he acts on them, period, right?
Yeah, yeah.
And this arc, I think, is a little bit about that. Initially, he's being asked to be passive. He's being asked to just wait while Jar Jar figures things out. He's being asked to trust. He can't do it.
Yep.
And then eventually, once he gets into a little bit more sense of union and connection with Jar Jar, he gives him this, they come to this Jedi balance, right? Of take a deep breath, focus. It will be clear when the time comes to take definitive action. And like, to me, that's very interesting, because I think that's the Jedi balance of, it is our responsibility to take action. The great challenge is to identify the correct moment and time to take action, when to be passive and when to ignite your blade and be a shield.
And to do it. And to you're talking about this great like meditation sequence that's in the episodes here, because there's some stuff there on Jar Jar and his anxieties, and there's some good advice about focusing on the present. As hard as that can actually put into practice, it's easy to say, but I love just the episode commenting on that. And then Mace, be still. Calmness guides your action. It's about clarity, right? And then he just was like, I see, leaps into action. I love Jar Jar explaining what you just kind of talked about of, well, you were calm, now you're rushing. He's like, yes, but now we know where we're going. We got to do it. We got to do it. And this fuels this conversation about balance in this whole episode, and examining, you know, talk about darkness and light. When people are pushing the darkness over the light, you got to do something. That's one of the big goals of the Star Wars story. And I think a lot of it comes down to a little meditation scene.
Yeah, absolutely. And I think it really connects to things like what Luke wrestles with in Last Jedi, and the mistake that Rey almost repeats in Rise of Skywalker, of just because it can be really hard to pick the right action. The answer isn't just don't do anything.
Yeah.
You know, and that's what Star Wars so often comes back to. I want to talk definitely about the Mace journey and the Jar Jar relationship. I kind of thought about that as this journey of Mace relearning respect. I was going to say learning respect, but that felt insulting. I think relearning respect.
That's fair.
Do you have Mace thoughts, or do you want me to jump into what I was thinking?
Jump in. I have a couple of things, but they might flow out of this nicely. So charge ahead.
Yeah, I think it's just kind of a larger picture of what we were talking about, of the journey that he goes on, that when he first goes with Jar Jar, he's got a lot of the Jedi flaws that we are talking about, right? There's absolute hubris. There is the assumption that he is right because he's the Jedi and that there's no way Jar Jar could know anything. And because of those flaws, Mace almost behaves like Jar Jar, right? He is impatient. He is culturally clumsy, right? Like you just kind of feel like, hey, Mace Windu, you have egg on your very serious face when he tries to mind trick the Gwen guards. Yeah. And they were like, yeah, no, that's you should know better, Master Jedi. Yeah. You know, it's a clumsy, impatient thing to do. And it also shows like a lack of cultural respect. Mm-hmm. And then this will pop up again, I'm sure, in comedy. But like when he just can't deal with it anymore, it's been too long. So he bursts in to Jar Jar's conversation with Queen Julia and ruins her giving Jar Jar information. Jar Jar's got that great line of, that's what she was trying to do before you used to come in all hot like. So he starts out in this place of a total lack of patience, a total lack of respect. And then I feel like toward the end of that first episode, he starts to see Jar Jar, right? He starts to see his good heart. He starts to see his tenacity, and in particular, his connection with the Bardotten people. You know, I really like that Yoda has given Mace this counsel that the innocence of a child, this Gungan has, of just like, he has value. You just kind of have to understand where it's coming from. Mm-hmm. And I like Mace's line at the end of the first episode where he says, Jar Jar, maybe it's this place, but you're starting to make sense to me. And that to me was really about respect. Like Mace is getting out of his rhythm of I sit in a temple and I tell people what's what. And then I go out on the battlefield and I take care of business, period. I make my decisions fast and I act on them and I'm sure I'm right. And he's getting more into this place of being a little bit more flowing, a little bit more open. That is now showing more cultural respect to Bardotta and understanding where Jar Jar is coming from.
Yes, absolutely agree with all of this, and there's some great comedy. It's found throughout it because of this. It's great. You and I talk about the importance of comedy and comedy being a form of communicating on the bigger themes. Indeed, I think that pops up a lot. I think from there, I spin it off into a lot of the same discussion points, but this overall picture. I put down this note of overcoming prejudice, differences, distrust. And then even hate, that's brought up a few times here, and that combines with this fusing of skills, unique purposes, you could say, different cultures, unique perspectives for collective good. And you just run through the Bardottans and the Jedi, their differences. Jedi just straight up called kidnappers. Mace with Jar Jar Binks, when Mace says, he'll be out of his depth. Jar Jar with us, by the way, our prejudice and distrust of Jar Jar as a character comes up time and time again in the fandom, I think. And because of that, this comment, you mentioned it, and I had it written down as well, of just Jar Jar's mind of a child. To me, when you hear that a lot, it pops up, and you can spin that to be, insulting of, faith or belief or anything. It's just this idea of Jar Jar is free of a lot of the obstacles that get placed in front of us all, that we often place in front of us ourselves, or because of how we grow, or what we learn from. And it just Mace is just, despite being, at the end of the day, pretty good intention guy, meditates and thinks about what to do and takes action. He just has all these things in front of him here that you just kind of were discussing. And I just think that's how I took some of Jar Jar. Jar Jar doesn't, he just sees what is. He feels the connections. He knows the connections. It's not that he's a simple, dumb mind. I think that's where you can take that and accidentally or intentionally turn that into an insult. He's just free of all those obstacles. And then therefore you're allowed to see his skills and the unique purposes, and there's a lot of, the tongue of Jar Jar saves the day. He was born that way. That tongue saves the day. You got to see that.
Yeah, and it's justice for Jar Jar's tongue. Take that, Qui-Gon, but don't do that again. Yeah, and I think it really builds on the mace we've seen. It's so fun to watch the Clone Wars all in a row and in this analytical state of mind, and remembering it's the mace. It's Mace who's getting oftentimes on the council caught up in all the don'ts and can'ts, right? Like he is the one who argues that they kind of got to let the Republic Tribunal run roughshod over the Jedi, or they will look a certain way. They'll look like they're challenging the Senate, right? He's kind of boxing himself into the can'ts and the don'ts at times. And I think what's childlike, the innocence of a child this Gungan has is, he doesn't have this web of why nots in front of him. He just reacts, right? And sometimes it's in fear, but a lot of times it's just out of love and wanting to help people. And I think it's significant that when Mace is, warming up to him, Jar Jar just went through this terrifying experience in this temple of lava doom, and he just goes right back up to the surface. He's like, nope, I'm gonna give a rousing speech, I'm gonna save Queen Julia, because he's just gonna, and I think that's this fascinating relationship that leads into the second episode, where I feel like Mace has been kind of shamed into taking a step back, and I feel like he moves from being annoyed with Jar Jar to this role of support and guidance. He almost becomes, he's almost like, oh, if Jar Jar is childlike without disrespecting him, I will become parent-like.
Yeah.
And all that great wisdom that you've referenced that he gives him about, like, calm yourself and strike when the moment is right. Let's divide up our responsibilities. It's all communicated in this very friendly, mentor-like way once he accepts who Jar Jar is.
Yeah. All leading to three great lines. We should make a bomb bad team, Master and Mace. Mace, after a pause, indeed. But also, when even the cultists credit Mace, and Mace at the end goes, you mean the Jedi and the Gungan. True teamwork being learned from these episodes here. And you're right, a valuable lesson for Mace more than Jar Jar.
Yeah. And I love that Mace is still Mace, right? He's still like, well, I'll be kind of precise and specific. I'll handle the guards and whatever evil we find. You focus on the queen.
Yeah.
And, it is this great story of learning respect leads to connection and partnership and victory. And the fact that they do each have their task, it really helps them, right? To actually get things done. My last big thought, I think, is the same thing that you said, is that this relationship between Mace and Jar Jar mirrors the cultural conflict between the Bardotans and the Jedi, right? That they have some different perspectives and they're not able to communicate about them. And that relationship gets healed a bit as well.
It really does. Really does. Final thought for me on that is, it's interesting, at the beginning of the episode, when they arrive there, some comical situations with Mace being treated as number two on this mission here. But Jar Jar just straight up vouches for Mace, man. He doesn't back down from that. And I don't know if Mace would have done that if the roles were reversed. I don't know. But Mace is there. He gets it. But he's there to kind of, let me handle this. I like that Jar Jar at the beginning. He's like, nah, I vouch for him. This guy's good. He's with me. I don't see all the differences between us. I just see someone I need here. So I like that. Good job.
Yeah, no, that it is really great. It is Jar Jar is affording Mace more respect than Mace is to him at the beginning.
Yeah.
And it is just a great twist on the whole Jar Jar is less than, to be like, he can only walk into the room because, I gave him my plus one. So let's talk about how this arc reflects larger story, morality, perspective of Star Wars. Where did you go with that?
It's the story of the galaxy at this time. You talk about season six being a lot about the darkness closing in. We didn't know we were going to get a season seven. In fact, we didn't even think we really would get a season six. That's why we had that discussion up top about what season six is to us. We are racing up to Revenge of the Sith, and all of these episodes, from the five stuff to, of course, Yoda, it truly is about the story of the galaxy at the moment and how Bardotta's foundations of order and its system are near collapse. And if the dark side influence takes over, Bardotta will be destroyed. You mean like the galaxy right now? Yeah. So I love that start. And then that flows into this thing we keep talking about, this diversity of perspectives, experiences, and skills. That, to me, will be what fuels the Rebel Alliance, a.k.a. the light side, a little bit later on. And there's that great exchange of, and the good guys will triumph, right, Master and Mace? Mace looks with a smile. Yes, this is the tale of Star Wars in these two episodes of this buddy comedy with these wonderful characters.
It really is. There's that big picture idea that the dark side is clouding everything. There's lots of stories in the Clone Wars that are like little mirrors of what Palpatine's big plot is. Yeah. This feels like definitely a part of that. Of it is the aggression and the anger of the war that is causing all of these things to sort of spiral out of balance. Talzin clearly made this connection with these cultists on the dark web that we keep joking about, because she's vying for power, right? She might have just been like, I'm doing my Night Sister stuff. I'm, you know, I've got my planet. I've got my clan. I've got, you know, whatever amount of power that I want. Maybe we'll get more storytelling where she is constantly struggling for it. But it's that, you know, Sidious is like, no, wipe her out. You know, it's not explicit in this episode, and she's got more storytelling coming in the Son of Dathomir graphic novel to talk about. But in theory, I think she's vying for this power because she wants revenge. She doesn't want to be wiped out, right? And this is a reaction of Sidious's power grab.
Absolutely, Sidious at the center of it all. You're right; the hate spirals out from him.
Yeah. And I love how this episode plays on, like, there's a prophecy, darkness will engulf the galaxy. And, like, as a Star Wars fan, you want to be like, we know. Oh, a different prophecy and a different darkness, you know?
Yeah.
But just like that, there's, you know, how many planets are dealing with prophecies in the darkness engulfing things?
I love that. And it's these big picture ideas here that make me really value these episodes more and consider them valuable to the bigger story. And why they're in season six, right? Because I think at some point in my Star Wars life, probably in the last 5 years, I was like, season six is so big. Why are these two here, right?
Right.
It's a thought I had. I'm not saying you had or anyone else in the audience did. And now to really focus on these themes, it absolutely has its place in season six, with season six kind of saying, here's what's coming. And here's how we might stop it. Here's how we might fight it. Or here's what we can learn from it. These absolutely belong in this season.
Absolutely. And I think just kind of like as it wrapped up, a goodbye tour to the major players of this era. And I think all of Jar Jar's appearances where he's focused on in the early seasons, there's definitely this justice for Jar Jar. There's this reminder of what his theme has been since Phantom Menace, of everyone has value. And I feel like this one just turns it to 11, right? Yeah. Like the original story of Jar Jar in The Phantom Menace is, he's bumped into in happenstance, and Obi-Wan's very judgmental, and Qui-Gon's pretty judgmental, but is open to being like, no, the Force works to put people together and everyone has value. And then Padme is the one who makes the great, huge connection of we can heal this rift and we can have connection, and I can show that everyone has value. It's always been Jar Jar's theme, but in Phantom Menace, it's almost like the audience receives it. Padme reflects it. Qui-Gon reflects it up to a point. But in this arc, it is, like I said, turned to 11, where all of the power players of the galaxy are forced to accept his value, right?
Yeah.
It's not like a little moral at the end of it. It's Palpatine, Yoda, Mace Windu, Mother Talzin going, all right, I guess we have to respect him.
Yes, we do. Justice for Jar Jar in a big way.
Justice for Jar Jar. That is really the main theme of these two episodes. Any other thoughts before we take a break?
No, sir. Let's get to some Mace grimacing.
Excellent. We'll be back with lots of Mace grimacing comedy and action in just a moment.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Here's a cool fact. A crocodile can't stick out its tongue. Another cool fact, you can get short-term health insurance for a month or just under a year in some states. UnitedHealthcare short-term insurance plans are designed for people who are between jobs, coming off their parents' plan, or turning a side hustle into a full-time gig. Underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, they offer flexible, budget-friendly coverage with access to a nationwide network of doctors and hospitals. Get more cool facts about UnitedHealthcare short-term plans at uh1.com.
Hiring for your small business? If you're not looking for professionals on LinkedIn, you're looking in the wrong place. That's like looking for your car keys in a fish tank. LinkedIn helps you hire professionals you can't find anywhere else, even those who aren't actively searching for a new job but might be open to the perfect role. In a given month, over 70% of LinkedIn users don't even visit other leading job sites. So start looking in the right place. With LinkedIn, you can hire professionals like a professional. Post your free job on linkedin.com/achieve today.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom, like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Since 2013, Bombas has donated over 100 million socks, underwear, and T-shirts to those facing homelessness. If we counted those on air, this ad would last over 1,157 days. But if we counted the time it takes to make a donation possible, it would take just a few clicks. Because every time you make a purchase, Bombas donates an item to someone who needs it.
Go to bombas.com/ACAST and use code ACAST for 20% off your first purchase. That's bombas.com/ACAST, code ACAST.
And we are back to continue our discussion of the great buddy Jedi Gungan cop Mace Windu Jar Jar team up. Let's talk about action. Ken, there's a decent amount of action in these two episodes. Do you have some favorite moments?
A decent amount. It does, like you said earlier, take a little while to get there. Mm-hmm. But once it happens, I mean, Mace is skilled, you know, a lot of great stuff with Mace here. But for me, it starts with him. I love when he jumps into action and tries to open that door when Jar Jar is taken, right? And he just swings in like a video game. I'm playing a lot of that Lego Star Wars Skywalker saga. When you got to jump up onto a little bar and do a flip like you're in a circus. Mace had that kind of vibe of just let me get in there and then getting the door open. It's just a real fun Jedi action.
Yeah, absolutely. That it really, if there's been any ambiguity about what we're doing here, is like that sound effect of a stone door grinding, right? Where we're going, right?
Yeah.
First beat I wrote down is just kind of the set of that temple, and in particular, the action of seeing the weird contraption and the green energy and the orb, and just that, you know, it's a great moment to actually see exactly what they're doing of taking this Dagoian Master's force energy and what does that look like. But it's upsetting.
Yeah.
But also like very thrilling and a great bit of like, oh, here are the stakes.
Oh yeah, no, that Dagoian Master that dies. I feel bad. feel bad. It is. Yeah, I'm with you. Yep. On that.
This is what's happening. And then there's just the kind of that big explosion of action of Mace in Jar's attempted rescue of Queen Julia down in that temple. And there are a bunch of individual moments that I really enjoyed. In particular, I like when Mace and Jar Jar have ended up kind of. On a ledge, Mace has thrown Jar Jar up with the force, but then he gets attacked by another cultist. So he just lets Jar Jar drop.
Yeah.
Jar Jar goes past screaming. And then particularly brutal, efficient violence from Mace, where he elbows that warrior in the throat. Maybe the solar plexus falls and then catches Jar Jar. It's so great.
He knocks the cultist into the lava and flames, right? Is this the actual same beat? I'm trying to remember now.
I think elbows and then you know how much I love falling from a high place. Yeah, elbows that guy in the throat or solar plexus and just flops into the lava. Like, look, play with lava, win lava prizes, cultist.
Yeah, absolutely love that. Yeah, and that's some very Jedi, not well, It's very Indiana Jones, like action to me too, like falling and dying and some horrible fish. Cause you're the bad guy.
Exactly. Exactly. Mm-hmm. And then a couple beats after that, once he pulls Jar Jar back up, he does that massive force fling to get him to safety. But it's also like almost like he did it a little too powerfully. Jar Jar's just screaming and flying. I love that.
Yeah. Oh, that's great.
What else do you have in that general arena?
Yeah, well, kind of the beginning of a lot of this, when Mace kind of leaps into action and he has the staff and he just starts whacking people with the staff upside their head. kind of enjoyed that. I like seeing Jedi being forced to use different weaponry sometimes.
Yeah, and he does use a lot, right? He uses his lightsaber eventually, but he takes their staff. He just beats them with his limbs.
Yeah.
And my other favorite beat, when he just dodges the spear that goes into another cult member.
Oh, yeah. I love that. I forgot to write that one down because, that's very comedy, too. Yeah.
Yeah, great comedy. A lot of the fighting and the comedy gets combined. Mm-hmm. And then, for me, I go to the street fight in the second episode.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I love a good street. Again, Indiana Jones vibe. We're going to go to a market and bad guys are going to chase us. It's going to be awesome.
Yeah, we're going to. I love that. Well, we're going to keep just throwing a few more cultists at him to try to stop him. What were some beats in that whole long sequence that spoke to you?
Mace grimacing and scaring away a cultist is just the testament to Mace's power of grimace. He doesn't even need a saber. Just his grumpiness. And I respect, as a fellow grump, I respect when your grumpiness can do all the action for you.
Yeah, no, that was really, really great. I love, at one point, Jar Jar is, it's in a sequence where the Mace is dealing with the Gundarks, but there's also the sort of the animal master that they're trying to take down as well. And Jar Jar just does a flying punch and like, a lot of times with Jar Jar, it is the sort of he has the force of the clumsy where he kind of accidentally whaps somebody or shoots him from afar. Like this is Jar Jar on purpose jumping through the air and just cold cocking a guy in the face.
Yeah. Power of clumsy. Love that.
Yeah, so that one is great. I love that early in the Gundark's fight when he's had his lightsaber taken from him that Mace just does some like very Captain Kirk like chops to pressure points.
Oh yeah, he also has a double head smash I really love. Just bonk, just a coconut
classic
smash. Yeah, love that.
Yeah. And then I think the other beat for me is when Mace uses the force to get his lightsaber back and the animal trainer guy holds onto the lightsaber. I love every once in a while when we see a beat in action that we just have not necessarily seen before. And this idea that you could do that, you could hold on and try to resist. That was a really cool beat.
I like that too. Final one for me in terms of action, it might be comedy, but I have two beats. Sorry. The cultists suddenly having like an E-Web style gun blaster.
Oh, yeah. Yeah.
It was also very funny to me, too, of just like, F this. We got a blaster. And Jar Jar does some funny dancing. But I just thought that was great action of just like, yeah, we got this, too. We got mystical creatures and dark powers. We also got this E-Web repeating blaster style weapon here.
And a great Jar Jar moment where he's just like, I'm paraphrasing, but Mace got to be brave, right? And just goes running at a giant blaster.
Love that.
And Moff Gideon would be happy to tell him why that was a bad idea.
Yeah, absolutely. He'd be there. Exposition indeed. And the final one for me is, Talzin's sword is real cool.
Oh, yeah. That was my last one as well. Flaming green blade of magic. Come on.
Yeah. You know, not rooting for her in this scenario here, but that's pretty cool.
That's pretty great. So I had that written down. And then my other final beat is, I love that when they fight the Stone Guardians and Mace is surprised that Jar Jar kind of held his own because he, as he said, found a Bang Booma gun. Mm-hmm. I like that beat, but I really like that Jar Jar just takes his Bang Booma gun and just clears out all the cultists at once, protecting Queen Julia. Just blasts them. Justice for Jar Jar, indeed. It's too bad that great black series that we both like didn't come with a Bang Booma gun.
Absolutely. Yeah. I need a big Bang Booma gun.
So moving on from action, let's talk about comedy, whimsy, weirdness. These two episodes are legitimately very funny to me. A lot of laugh out loud lines. I really like the sort of mismatch buddy comedy. So I wrote down probably too much. I'll try to edit as we go. What do you have in your list of comedy, whimsy, and weirdness?
Yeah, you can almost say it's a canon connection too, but just Mace starting this all off by like, do not touch anything. That's probably been said to Jar Jar more than anything in his life. But I love that idea.
Yeah, and I really like that he is just, it seems, for absolutely no reason, Jar Jar is just reaching up. You know, it's not something that Mace says crankly when they get on the ship. He is like a child. He is about to touch something he shouldn't.
Right. Yeah.
That's what made that one really, really funny to me. I also like at the very beginning in the narration, it's made a puzzling request to save her people from certain doom. I always love certain doom. Right away, even the narrator's like, the hell is going on that she only wants help from Jar Jar? A puzzling request. I love that. That sets the tone right away. And then going forward a little bit, when Jar Jar is advocating for Mace in the council and he says, Dessa Jedi is Misa Palo. And Mace's eyes pop at the idea that Jar Jar isn't just vouching for him or that he's a powerful Jedi, but that Jar Jar would say, he's my friend. We're buddies.
Yeah.
Mace's eyes pop. And I feel like in a way that's like, it's kind of the grumpy mean, but I also feel like it's a kind of a dime dropping moment for him of like, oh, this being that I barely tolerate thinks we're friends.
Yeah. Jar Jar.
Jar Jar. What are some more moments for you?
I had this this one here. It's a little bit earlier. Mace just straight up grumping when Jar Jar just simply explains and lets it be known that he and Julia have known each other for a long time. And, you know, whatever's going on, it's right. Their little privacy for Jar Jar and Julia. But I just, Mace, like, Jar Jar's only crime is he's just saying the truth. And Mace just kind of reacts like, it's like, as a grump, even I'm like, Mace, it's calm it down now. Calm it down.
Yeah. Do you think that grumpiness is just coming from like, I can't believe this is real or there's something else going on or, you know, I can't believe I'm stuck in this scenario. What do you think he's grumpy about when Jar Jar's just being like, what, we're friends?
Yeah, I think maybe a little bit of Mace knows he's probably not in the pole position here. He doesn't have the power. Jar Jar has it. And I can't defeat that. I have to know my role here. I just think a little bit of that going on.
Right, he's grumbling about the reality that he has to sit in the backseat of this particular power dynamic this moment.
Yeah, indeed.
Yeah, yeah. Another moment I really love is when Queen Julia just full-on kisses Jar Jar, and I forgot that he has the little leg lift of bliss.
Yes, yes.
That's really funny. The conversation that they have after Mace interrupts the conversation between Jar Jar and Queen Julia, and we learn that Jar Jar's just been doing something all night. And Mace says, what do you think you're doing? Where were you last night? It's so like, I didn't sign your, you know, vacation card. I didn't, you know, you didn't check in with me. And then Jar Jar says, doing? Misa loved a Queen Julia, which is really just opening. Is that answering a question or creating a question of what they were doing? Of like, we were sitting around loving one another.
Kids, sometimes Bardotans and Gungans, when they love each other. Yeah, I love it. And I got to tell you, I think it's a forgotten angle of this this whole arc. It's great. I love it. Rarely do we get such direct Star Wars adult humor, if you will. I love it.
Absolutely. You get the sense that maybe if that conversation continued, Jar Jar would try to give a birds and the bees talk to Mace Windu.
To Mace. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. No, absolutely. And it's even though it's a buddy film, we keep talking about little rom-com moment too. Where were you last night? Yeah, I love that.
Yeah. What are some other moments for you?
I enjoy Julia just straight up saying at the beginning when you know, Mace is here and Jar Jar vouches for her, but she's just like, all right, so he's your servant then. And Mace just really, talk about the grumpiness. And it's just, like, yeah, that's the scenario. That's the scenario. I guess I just like seeing Mace struggle with his position in life. I have nothing against Mace. I don't know why, but it's just funny.
Yeah, no, absolutely. Absolutely. It's one of the things that makes this so great is there is a bonanza of grumpiness. I like the reverse grumpiness that happens at the beginning of the second episode when Mace is saying, like, look, this is enough of a disturbance in the forest. I can sense it and just be calm and wait. Mm. And he's describing what he sees in the forest of, I see people, market streets. Jar Jar says, yep, Mace, see that from here too. if Mace has learned to calm down and be a little bit more intuitive from Jar Jar, it feels like Jar Jar is picking up the grump from Mace in that moment.
Yeah. Yep, right there.
Yep, yep. Another moment of grumpiness, even within they're trying to look together, is when they're riding the beasts of burden, and Jar Jar's just wailing, just screaming, hee-wah! And there's that absolutely miserable look on Mace's face, right? Mm-hmm. Like, mm-hmm. I am not a parent, but it's almost like that look that I've seen on other parents' face when, like, it's understandable my child is upset, but man, do I wish they'd stop making that noise.
I like that whole sequence too. It really, the shades of Last Crusade of, you know, when they're chasing the Nazis in their tank and they're trying to get the Holy Grail, and, like, you know, the Sala gets the horses and they're riding. You got Marcus Brody, who's just bumbling away around everything, kind of a Jar Jar in his own way. And just some Mace in this moment, kind of having that Harrison Ford, like, yeah. Gotta use these horses to go save the day. Love that energy there.
Yeah, that's really great. I got one more. Anything else from you?
A couple little beats here. I do love Jar Jar at one point just saying, Mace not big with the Force. Even though we know he's got value. He's got value in the Force, and that's even what's kind of the follow-up beat, but I love that there. And then I love when things are starting to resolve and the cultists say, we did not know the Gungan had such powerful friends. So they undervalued Jar Jar. Look where that got him.
Yeah, no, that is a great line. They deserve what's coming to him for underestimating Jar Jar. We talked about it as kind of a big idea line, but it did also make me laugh Mother Talzin says kind of a pretty typical thing of, like, my dark magic is more powerful. And then he has the magic is only an illusion. And I totally agree with the breakdown that we did of it. I think he is using magic as this idea that it's kind of a shortcut to connection and power, as opposed to naturally communing. Plenty of room to debate that. But the way that grumpy Mace says magic is only an illusion, it just feels like he's getting pissed about going to the magic castle, right? It's like somebody who's like, you want to watch Penn and Teller? And he's like, no.
We'll see. And I do like Penn and Teller, but I've definitely said this more on other podcasts at Force Center, but I think I'm probably at some point I've mentioned it. I don't like magic. And I am that guy who, some people are like, hey, maybe people listening aren't super familiar. The Magic Castle is a big place in Hollywood and really cool place, by the way. But I've never been there because I always get, you have to be invited. And I'm always like, people are like, I can get you the Magic Castle. I'm like, yeah, I'm good. I don't like magic. I don't know what it is. And I don't mean to insult anyone. I have people, friends of my life who are actual magicians at the castle. So I am Mace in this moment. I was dying at this line. I wrote it down. Yeah, magic's just an illusion. You just did a trick. I don't want to go.
Yeah, yeah. No, I've been invited to Magic Castle. I've never been able to go. I've had friends who have done things there. It's all secretive, and, you know, speak so highly of it. I've known other magicians I've liked. I actually wrote banter for a magician for a while. Where he would tell me kind of the trick he wanted to do. And he's like, I need some jokes around it and all that. So I do like it. I do respect it. I do think there is a little bit of, like, you are agreeing as an audience member to put yourself into this place of ignorance.
Yeah.
Of saying, how'd you do that? You know?
Yeah. Well, look, I'm a pro wrestling fan. That's been my entire career. Can I make you believe this? Yeah. No, you're so right. You're so right.
Yeah, but clearly, I think Mace would not be his chosen form of entertainment, right?
No, no.
I think he probably gets grumpy at the opera too, right?
He just gets grumpy. Yeah.
I think he's probably just like, I have work to do. I mean, I get entertainment, but why?
Yeah, yeah, yeah.
Any other moments for you before we move on to the canon
No, other than I just clearly have to work on some stuff. It's just like, I know you're doing a card trick and I can't, you know, I love Ricky J, but I can't, I don't know. I'll be with Mace in the bar.
Yeah. No, for me, I think it really comes down to tone. There's some magicians I've seen who I've absolutely adored and then some that aren't for me. Yeah, that's life. But I'll try not to be as grumpy as Mace Windu about it. We'll move on to canon connections, lore connections, connections to other stories. I just want to talk a little bit to begin with about the just Bardotten lore, right? This is one of the reasons that I feel like this, I get really excited about this episode because there are connections and things that might really play out. One of the things that I love about this is the different perspective on the Force. And we get that in different places in Star Wars storytelling, but this is kind of a big one. It's on screen. It's, you know, very canon. So there's the pod racer Mars Guo is also Bardotten.
Yeah,
that's a fun detail. One of the things I wanted to be sure about, one of my and your favorite Jedi from the High Republic, Porter Engel, we meet as an older person who's had a lot of adventures and is sort of renowned for being extremely powerful and a deadly combatant when he chooses to be, and even great storytelling about, you know, I'm more into making soup now, but when I need to unleash, I can unleash. And his big name that is sort of the signifier of his absolute prowess as a combatant is the Blade of Bardotta. In the second I read that, I was so excited because it connects back to this arc and not in like, cool, I've heard that name word Bardotta before, but the fact that if it was like Blade of Alderaan, that would be fascinating, right? But the storytelling possibility it suggested, and that I think we're probably going to get in phase two of High Republic, that it's going to be about the Jedi encountering other Force philosophies. And if they're not big into warriors, if they're more passive, was the Blade of Bardotta, you know, popular on Bardotta? What are your thoughts being a Porter Engel fan?
Yeah, this is, I love it. And you're right. It moves so far beyond just a, hey, that's that thing I think I heard. I literally think if you were to redo this episode, Yoda, in telling that story, and Mace in the council chamber would turn to the camera and say, to be completed in a High Republic short story or comic coming to you soon. Like it's just everything about it sets all that up. I'm fascinated by that. I can't wait to get more information on that. And I do think that's coming. Like you said, it's all there. It's a deep cut, and to pull that back and pull it into the High Republic era. I'm so excited for that.
Yeah. To just get to spend more time in book form with this different view on the Force that the Jedi clearly understand, but have a philosophical difference with, of like the Jedi are clearly like, oh, wow, just letting your minds float wild in the living Force. That sounds great. But we have responsibilities because we choose to believe that we must act, you know, maybe the Bardottans aren't at that place of their philosophy yet. Maybe we'll see a story that causes them to move to that philosophy.
Right. Yeah.
But absolutely, if they are already in that philosophy, being called the Blade of Bardotta isn't just like being called Blade of random Star Wars planet, right? It's like being called a Sword of Pacifism Town.
Yes.
Fascinating.
Yeah, absolutely.
Another bit of Bardotten lore that every time I watch this arc, I was like, is there anything in this about this? And the answer is no. So I have to ask you, Ken, in your headcanon, when and how did Jar Jar and Queen Julia become special friends?
That is a million-dollar question. We always say Star Wars wants you to ask why, not how or what. First, how? I don't get the sense he's traveled too far off Naboo, but I guess I'm completely wrong. Or maybe she showed up some sort of, I don't know, not unlike Satine and Kenobi in their meeting early on, the story we've never really seen. Maybe Queen Julia was Princess Julia at this point and goes on some diplomatic mission to meet with Boss Nass and, you know, a little rom-com breaks out. That's my headcanon.
Yeah. I admit I didn't look it up on Wikipedia, so maybe there's something there, some deep cut about how Queen Julia and Jar Jar met. But yeah, I like how open it is and just like because it makes you, the audience, feel like put you in Mace Windu's shoes of this is very unexpected, right? Mm-hmm. But yeah, I can absolutely see that of like, yeah, Princess Julia came to Naboo for some reason. The Living Force directed her there. Or I like the idea of like, hey, he is Representative Binks. You know, maybe he got either sent there or he was like, there's some, you know, diplomatic dinner that isn't that important before the Clone Wars even break out. And he ends up hooking up with Queen Julia at a diplomatic summit.
I like that because that would be, you know, now what, roughly 13 years after Phantom Menace. So a lot of time. You're right. I think I even undervalued his political career. But what about this? I'm going to pitch this back to you, going back to even my idea here. What if the reason he like crashed Boss Nass's speeder is a little date was happening during her visit.
So you think that Jar Jar was in the back of the hay blibber when he crashed?
Exactly.
That is a thing of great, great beauty. Yeah, I'm looking at the canon tab and it is just a breakdown of the episode. Maybe there's something more in the wilds of the legends tab where that was answered. Who knows? But I also wanted to talk about the kind of specifics with the Dagoian master lore, right? Because the Bardotta's the planet, Bardotta's the people, but then this council is the Dagoian masters, right? Yeah. Mm-hmm. And want to be sure to dive into the fact that they think the Jedi were kidnappers for taking Bardotan children. Yeah. And I like that the Jedi say that they think we didn't give the kids a choice, which the Jedi think that they do give the kids a choice. Everybody chooses the Force. Everybody has, it seems like, at different ages in canon, the opportunity to go, this isn't for me.
Yeah.
Bye. How did you feel about that? Did you feel like this was like, since the Phantom Menace came out and people were surprised by, like, I didn't know the Jedi were kidnappers. Like, this seems like answering a fan question or wrestling with a fan question. How did you feel about all that?
Yeah, wrestling with a fan question is a great way to put it for me. And I think it's okay to wrestle with it. Even recent clips from that Old Republic stuff, the short film that Alex Backus wrote, I was even talking to him about it. Of like, hey, I just want to question a little bit what the Jedi are doing. Doesn't mean it's wrong. Just mean let's look at it. And I think it's fair to look at. And I think it's fair for the Jedi to have a rebuttal. And I think you're right about some of the stuff and the choices along the way, but it's all to me represented in Mace just kind of going, yeah, we're called kidnappers again. Like that happens a lot. You got to work through it. it's a PR problem. But I love it. I don't specifically have an answer in my head here, but I love wrestling with it. I think it's fair. I think it's absolutely fair. I just still always kind of side with the greater purpose of the Jedi.
Yeah, I really like that there are different cultural attitudes to it. I love that in the High Republic, they make a point of celebrating that the Mirlin culture is thrilled when a Force user emerges in their culture and it's celebrated. And Vernestra Rowe kind of focuses on like, that's a kind of benefit that I had. Not every culture is supportive, right?
Yeah.
So it makes sense that there would be some cultures who are like, no, absolutely not. My perception is that the Jedi don't sneak in the middle of the night.
Right. Yeah.
Jedi show up and are like, we have sensed that your child has this possible great destiny. We would like to take them and train them. And, when they get of age to say, nah, don't want this. Well, it's not like we're keeping them against their will, you know?
Yeah.
And within that, there's still plenty of room to question, because that is that great question of the, do parents have the right to decide that life choice for their children at such a young age? More, I think, to be discussed in canon about like, what is the very first time that the children are offered the choice? You know, this even goes to Luke. Is Luke the debate about, is Luke giving Grogu the choice, you know, at the right time in Grogu's journey? You know?
Yeah.
I think it is very rich and very interesting. And I like that they just say like, yeah, no, it's kind of a bummer. We had to just, we clearly have a lot of respect for the Dagoian masters. They're very powerful. And we just leave them alone because they hate our guts.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Big stuff.
It's really powerful. Yeah. And in that arc where Palpatine has hired Cad Bane to steal the holocron with a lot of the future Force users, you know, a lot of the parents that we see there are happy to see the Jedi, right?
Yeah, indeed.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So a lot of great storytelling with that one. How do you feel when Yoda is talking about how the Duguayan masters allow their minds to float in the living force? He says, Yoda says, which is essential. Do you interpret that as it's essential to their way of life? Or do you think Yoda is saying, like, the living force itself for everyone is benefited by this communing that the Duguayan masters do?
I would say for the bigger picture, the general picture, maybe a little bit of both, where he's saying, hey, it's key for them, but maybe it should be more key for a lot of us. And then maybe looks over at Mace or someone else. No, I don't know. I think that works for Yoda in the big picture.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, I think it's fun to explore that lots of different ways of mm-hmm. That Yoda is saying that it's essential that beings do that they spend time, you know, just totally trying to be one with the living force as well as the cosmic force. But I also like the idea that, yeah, maybe the Duguayan masters are really channeling something or bringing some peace to the living force. You know, mm-hmm. the living force is what is emanating from beings, right? So is there a part of through the whole living force, they're spreading a little calm.
Yeah.
Like fun ideas. Then I really like that the Duguayan shrine is built on top of the Temple of Doom, the Temple of Lava, whatever you want to call this temple. This mirrors lots of things, right? The story that the Jedi Temple is built on Coruscant is built over the ancient Sith Temple, the balance on Octo, that height of power on the rock at the top that is the light side is then, you know, balanced by mm-hmm. the dark mirror cave beneath. How did you feel about that that symbolism, that idea being repeated in this arc?
Yeah, it just makes a lot of sense for the bigger story and the idea of, I think light can be built over darkness. You need darkness for the light. Hey, that's kind of the moral right now. but it just kind of works. And then, you know, also a little fun Temple of Doom might call back as well. So you can look at it on all levels, literally. Makes a lot of sense. And if you want to break it down to even the meaning about our own souls going into the darkness, there's some stuff even that Mace says about, you know, we're heading down there. And that's kind of the path at this point where we got to go. Then yes, Jar Jar, this is the correct path as they go down to face darkness.
Yeah, no, I think that's why I love it. This idea that we all have buried mm-hmm. lava temples that we do better to face rather than to ignore and let them surprise us. Yeah. And this idea that there's always going to be this pull if you give in to anger and darkness and focusing on who is the other and how are they trying to hurt me, that there's always this possibility to go back to something that was older, that we've tried to move past and build upon and build something more peaceful and, you know, connective on top of.
Yeah.
It's this very, this cultural analogy too, about, you know, hopefully we can all evolve into treating one another better and building a better society. It does make me wish that we got that rough Clone Wars story that Filoni's talked about in conventions about, I think, Ahsoka discovering the Sith Temple.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Just a couple of other little things is fun to see in a dark way, to see the Zygerian with the Tuka among the cultists. Mm-hmm. What did you make that the cultists weren't just Bardotans, but just had a bunch of buddies with them?
I kind of like that. If you want to fight for the dark side, the dark side will take you, right? And try to make you their own. So I kind of like that. But it did stand out to me because I think I forgot that going into this arc. I thought it was all one team, if you will.
Yeah, I wrote down, hey, it's like you're in with the Tuka. That's kind of a fun back. Oh, no, she's one of the cultists. Okay, cool. Yep. Of course, Gundarks. You always got to give the Gundarks a shout out and seeing exactly how hard it would be to pull the arms off of them. Mm-hmm. Even Mace Windu struggles.
Yeah.
Final thing for me is the Mother Talzin trying to become more powerful. I think that is really a middle of her story. It speaks to what happened with the devastation on Dathomir. And it's important to that Son of Dathomir arc that we will be discussing. We have to decide exactly when we're going to cover that in the Clone Wars report, but we are going to cover that Son of Dathomir arc. Any thoughts on Mother Talzin, Ken?
Fascinating. I think in the back of my head, I remembered it. This was her, but I hadn't watched these episodes probably 5 years, maybe. I can't remember. So it was fun to see her there. The Night Sisters are so interesting. We've had a lot of fun discussing them and what they mean, the relationship. And I think relationship to the Force and Talzin kind of goes into it here pretty specifically. So I like that. And can't wait to get to the Son of Dathomir stuff. So yeah, don't worry. We're going to cover that.
Yeah, awesome. Any other canon or lore connections that you wanted to, either from Star Wars or Indiana Jones?
Yeah, indeed. Big one. The fact that Jar Jar says Maxi Big the Force. I mean, come on.
Yes. I've always liked that line. Like, oh, yeah. Powerful. Big. Same. Big deal. Same. And also, like, there's no shame in it. He's not, when he's like, yeah, no, I don't have that much force.
Yeah. Makes me feel even, I just love Jar Jar even more when he's just like, no, I know my limitations.
Yeah, I mean, take what you can get, but yeah. And even the Fringal cult leader says the Force resides in all living things. What little you have will be ours.
Yeah.
Mean, but true. Was there anything that you disliked or questioned in these episodes that we haven't touched on yet?
No, I think, not in terms of bigger things, but I think you're right to have those, what we can turn into fun questions about, well, how and well, what happened. And I think that's fun. And maybe that speaks to something about how these episodes were put together and what needed to be put in and maybe what was taken out. So maybe, Jonathan Rensselaer had that explanation. Maybe there was a monologue of the date that Julie and Jar Jar went on. But no, I was good with overall everything in there. But yeah, that probably might be what, looking back, what made these episodes not jive with me right away of just like, I don't know what's going on, and I'm not going to dig into it, and that's unfortunate. Dig in. Always dig in.
Yeah. I think for me, it does sometimes watching this arc feel like maybe at one point in the planning, there was a third episode when there was going to be a full season, you know, I feel so grateful that they said, like, no, these are important. They got to be in there. And with the mystery of the whatever meet cute happened between Jar Jar and Julia, that's almost like fun because it makes it even more, you know, WTF.
Yeah.
But I think because I'm so invested in the Night Sister story and Mother Talzin, you know, we keep making jokes about, you know, where did she post her, you know, looking for cultists, I would have taken a little bit more clarity on Mother Talzin, on the cult itself. I was reading that it never made it into the script, but the intention was that one of the leaders that gets name checked, High Seneschal Patin, is meant to be the cult leader, and just didn't put it actively in the episode. And that's the direct connection to Temple of Doom, where the leader was, you know, being used by the cultists.
Yeah, no, I you're right, because I even did some freeze framing of like, wait, when Jar Jar's taken, of like, was it the guy that was walking with him? I got a little confused, but
yeah, and I think And I feel like, you know, I feel like the difference to me sometimes is like with Queen Julia and Jar Jar, like that'd be a fun story, but it's not necessary. I don't think this is necessary, but I think it would be richer for me if I understood, you know, Mother Talzin probably sold this cult, you know, a bill of goods. You know, what do they think they're getting? That's so often like the great story, even going to Indiana Jones with people going after power and never actually getting what they think they're going to
right
by going after power. And I think there's a part of me that would like, I would have been interested in that story of how did they connect? What's this cult really truly want? Did Talzin straight up lie to them, or is she going to become powerful enough to just, you know, would she give them what they wanted? All that kind of great stuff.
And we're making the jokes, you know, Mother Talzin would like to connect with your network on LinkedIn. That's probably where it happened. But yeah, no, I think a little, you know, it's only because I'm always intrigued by Talzin and just the Night Sisters' existence. And I know where they came from when they were first mentioned and legends and everything. But to have them, you know, be used so powerfully in the Clone Wars, I wouldn't mind. And I know they're wiped out, but wouldn't mind, other than Maron, we should say, I wouldn't mind continuing to explore them in further storytelling.
Absolutely. Let's get Maron riding a Rancor and the circle will be complete.
There you go.
Is there anything that we have not talked about that you wanted to touch on?
I mean, I woke up this morning and thought, we might have a just kind of a shorter Clone Wars report. Wrong. We discussed it all, as these episodes deserve.
Yeah. Final thing for me is just, like, I think this is a great performance by Ahmed Best. I really think that the vocal performance of Jar Jar, it hits all the high notes of previous performances, but there's even more. Like, he just really goes for it. He really, to me, lands the buddy comedy, some of those moments where he gets exasperated. It's just a phenomenal performance, I think, and I wanted to shout out Ahmed Best's great performance as Jar Jar.
Always supportive of that, and so great to have him, you know, move back into this role for this series. Initially, he wasn't there, as we know, and just own every aspect of this character. I love it.
Absolutely. So as we begin to wrap up here, we always talk about fun merch. If you could have a figure or merch of any kind from these episodes, who or what do you want, Ken?
You got to go right for it. We need the Cinema Scenes, Julia and Jar Jar mind meld kiss. We got to have that. Just give me that figure set.
Absolutely. Everything is really demanding some multi-packs. I definitely want the Mace and Jar Jar buddy pack where Mace is sculpted with a permanent frown. I mean, most of his action figures are that way, but even more grumpy frown. Yeah. And I want it to come with Mace's normal lightsaber, but then I want it to come with just his hilt that has visible saliva on it, his wet hilt from Jar Jar grabbing it with his tongue.
And can we go into Galaxy's Edge, into the lightsaber building thing, and go, I'd like a 1,000 ghost sword. Can I make that?
Exactly. You know, it's great that we can get all these lightsabers, but could I just have a magic sword that just flames into green, fiery existence? That would be wonderful.
Love it.
Careful with that at Disneyland, kids. Next up, we have one single episode, but a big one. Season 6, Episode 10, The Lost Ones. Really excited to dive into that. Ken, what should the moral of this episode of our podcast be?
The success of your podcast will be based on a powerful mix between childlike appreciation of what you're talking about and adult grumpiness.
I think that is very perfect and very accurate. Where can people find us?
Hey, we are the Force Center Podcast Feed. You can find us on Twitter, Force Center Pod. We're on Instagram, YouTube as well. Facebook page is Force Center Podcast. Hey, if you'd like to look for us all over podcast places, we're on Acast, we're on Apple Podcasts, Google Podcasts, Stitcher, TuneIn, just search. You'll find us. Merch is available at tpublic.com/user/Force Center. And you can support us directly at patreon.com/Force Center. From there, you can get connected with our Discord server to talk Star Wars every day with Force Center friends. Big announcement that has been confirmed this week. More information to come. But at Star Wars Celebration, we will be part of the Star Wars Explained podcast on the podcast stage on May 26, 2 p.m. More details about what that is and all that cool stuff. But we're happy to join Alex and Molly there. You can follow me at Ken Napsok or go to KenNapsok.com for more information. Joseph, for you.
Yes, excellent. Very, very excited for the announcement and excited to do that panel with Alex and Molly and anybody who can make it, of course, in the audience. You can find me Twitter, Instagram, TikTok is at Joseph Scrimshaw, and you can check out my website at josephscrimshaw.com for lots of other comedy adventures. But for now, for myself, for Ken, for the kissing lips of Jar Jar Binks, this has been the Clone Wars Report.
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. WarbyParker.com/covered.
Acast powers the world's best podcasts. Here's a show that we recommend.
I'm Ina Garten. Welcome to Be My Guest, the podcast. One of the best gifts you can give friends is spending time together. But what's even better than that? Cooking with them. On Be My Guest, the podcast, new friends and old stop by my barn for some conversation and great cooking. We talk about food, life, and everything in between. Listen to Be My Guest, the podcast with me, Ina Garten, and join us wherever you get your podcasts.
Acast helps creators launch, grow, and monetize their podcasts everywhere. Acast.com.